I am Andrew Bogish, as Brian Jones just learned. I am
in what are you doing here?
I'm in for Gio this morning, who has been pulled down the hallway because of a sick day. So Gio's hanging out with his fancier friends, and I get to hang out with you this morning, BJ. And as we all expected, we all found out at about 6 p.m. Eastern yesterday that this was happening, and you found out at 6 a.m. Eastern this morning. How are you?
Yeah. Mm. What's going on around here?
A lot of things.
I am not privy to it.
No, you were privy to it.
I was?
You just chose not to privy it.
Oh,
does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
With what he said. Well, that makes sense. Let's hope our buddy Jerry gets better and is back in business here quickly. Thinking about you, Jerry Recco.
Okay. I mean, you say it as if something real happened, and as if
something
you've been
real
on,
did happen.
As if you've been on top of the situation for the last 12 hours, and
I'm saying it like I just found out. So, and I'm hoping he feels
Me
better.
Me too. Hopefully, the Dodgers feel better as well.
Doesn't matter when you find out, as long as you
I
care
guess.
When you find out, right?
Yes. So no. They can't all be winners. We had 5.5 really good, entertaining, close, dramatic, back and forth, epic. We crawled in and out of the crevasse of delight over and over again during this series. And then last night, it was like second base. It was 5-0 quickly. A couple of chances early for the Dodgers to get back into this one. But the Astro bullpen, much maligned going into the postseason and then through the postseason, did a heck of a job post Lance McCullers last night. And here we are. The Astros, who began as the Colt 45s in 1962, finally have a world title.
Great for Houston, considering everything they've gone through with Hurricane Harvey, and great for this franchise, everything they've gone through. They had issues not only on the field but off the field. Jim Crane took over as the owner of that baseball team, and they had problems with their television partners there in Houston. It was just a total mess. We've had Reed Ryan, who's a member of that front office, on the show a number of times, and I've known Reed for a while now, and he and Lou now, the general manager, and Jim Crane, that whole organization have done just a fabulous job piecing that team together and believing, as Lou now said last night, believing in their philosophy, and Reed has shared with us on this show that they wanted to go out and draft athletes and not just the select baseball players, the players that just focus on baseball, one sport. No, we want guys who are well-rounded, and that's what they've done, and they've just amassed a wonderful young baseball team, and here and there they've brought in vets, and those guys have played a huge role. Brian McCann, Carlos Beltran, and others, and Charlie Morton, the job he did those last four innings, but he allowed one base runner in the last three, I believe. He was just nails last night, and Gio has shared his story from his days at Pittsburgh with us numerous times about all of the travails and issues he had to overcome, and he talked a little bit about that last night in the post game, but a great victory for the city of Houston, a great victory for that franchise. That was just a whipping they put on the Dodgers last night.
Yeah, and I heard multiple people yesterday predicting throughout the day on our air, on different places, in print, on Twitter, wherever it was, that they just almost are guaranteeing a dramatic Game 7. We got a great one last year. The one in 2014 between the Royals and Giants was great as well. They can't all be epics. And what's where the credit goes last night is the Astros, you know, jumping on the Dodgers immediately. And George Springer, it kind of reminded me, it wasn't as impactful because it didn't go over the fence, but Jeter's first pitch home run in the Subway Series that kind of immediately ended any thought of the
right.
Mets rallying, getting back in that series, set the tone right away. You know, Springer ripping the double, and then Bellinger makes the horrible throw at first base on the grounder over there. They get their two runs in the first inning, and then Springer, the bigger swing in the second, the two-run homer that changes the entire dynamic of that inning in the game. I mean, that's how you win on the road in any kind of big game, in any sport. You throw the quick punch, and Springer and the Astros delivered it, and immediately, you know, once they survived those two quick chances for the Dodgers to get right back in this game, and it wasn't over from there, but I mean, That's how you get things done in a big spot.
Immediately, you want to take the crowd out of the equation, and that's what they did. Springer did that. He has been doing that all season long. He had some hiccups in the ALCS, and then he turned things around late in that series, and he just kept going, and especially in this one, five home runs the last few ball games.
Remarkable.
Yeah, it's just tremendous. The third person to do that was Chase Utley and Reggie Jackson.
Yes.
And so you take the crowd out, and you also want to instill some doubt in the home team.
Yep.
And everyone's jacked, everyone's amped up, and immediately you jump on top of them 2-0, and you've got that pitcher reeling out there who didn't pitch his first outing, so he's very focused on coming out and getting the bad taste out of his mouth, and he being Yu Darvish, and that doesn't occur. And we've been talking all series about these managers pulling pitchers too soon, and especially Dave Roberts. He couldn't pull this guy soon enough. I mean, he's down 2-0. I'm yanking him immediately, especially in the second inning. He's walking guys. He's giving up hits. Let's go. Let's hit this bullpen right now. You pull him faster than you can slap a tick. I mean, what was he waiting on? Then he gives up it gets 2 outs, and he gives up the 3-run home run. Come on. I'm taking him out ASAP. If I have any hint of Yu Darvish not being on point, you're out of here. And from the first batter on, he wasn't on point.
Yeah, I thought about that in the moment, and I thought about it for the next couple of innings after Springer took him deep. And I never got to a conclusion. So I'm no help to you here.
I got to a conclusion.
Well, because the thing, and I get it. Like all hands are on deck, and you can't fall behind 5-0. But he had just gotten 2 ground ball outs. Now he's facing a guy that ripped a double off him and is the hottest guy in the lineup coming back in the second inning. And he had Morrow up, to come in as a reliever as if it was the 7th or the 8th and get out of a jam. And then turn things over to Kershaw to give him the length to kind of get things back on the normal rhythm. But as you're sitting there in the dugout, and again, this is all afterthought and second guessing, I'm sitting there and I'm trying to think, do I leave Yu Darvish in? Do I leave or do I take him out? And never crosses my mind that he's going to groove. I mean, that pitch was right down the middle. Had Springer not hit it 450 feet, there would have been an issue. And that's what I wouldn't have saw coming. Didn't walk him, didn't miss with a couple of frisbee sliders. He just put a fastball right down the middle. So I don't know. I'm not doing my job by not having a hot take on this.
Surprising.
Yeah.
You should have said Andrew Bogut.
I sat there and I'm like, do you take him out? I think in the moment I chose I didn't want to go to my bullpen that fast, even though the game was basically over with that swing.
Right.
You're so screwed if all of a sudden your reliever's in the second inning, I probably would have done the same thing Dave Roberts did.
Everyone's all hands on deck at that point.
Right.
So it's the last game of the season. You bring him in the first inning, second, whenever you need to, and I thought he needed to, especially early on in that second inning. But that, to your point, you're down 2-0. You think you can hold him there, yet your offense does nothing. They get the leadoff hitter on inning after inning. I think all the way up to about the 4th or 5th inning was the first time they didn't have a leadoff guy on. You get a couple guys on, no outs, and yet those balls that were grooved right down the middle, the Dodgers could not connect with those. If they did connect, it was a broken bat, it was a bloop hit, or a bloop fair ball, fly ball is what I'm trying to say. But they could not connect. That they could not generate any offense, and they but at the end of the night, I think it was 12 guys left on base. 12 guys left
10,
on base.
One of 13 with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, in scoring position. I mean, so they could not get their bats going. And Bellinger had a horrible series, striking out time after time. And so the pitching of McCullers, who admitted he had nothing, so he knew he was going to have a short night, but he had enough to keep the Dodgers at bay. And then they brought in Morton and some of the bullpen guys. Davinsky comes in, pitches up. Peacock. So their pitchers did a mighty fine job holding the Dodgers down. And Kershaw comes in. He's keeping it right there at 5 runs and hoping that his offense can finally start up, but they don't. They do nothing. They give that pitching staff, or at least Kershaw, nothing to work with, even though he held the Astros right there on that 5 spot. So they had their opportunities, and they couldn't do anything with them.
Yeah, the chance to me really was in that first inning, and there's differing schools of thoughts in baseball about how important it is to score right back again after you give up a run. And I think last night, if you got even just a run in that bottom of the first inning,
right,
it just changes the dynamic. And they get the bases loaded, and even before that, Bellinger's up there and he strikes out for the first time, and then the ground out, you got to get something in. You got to get somebody across. You got to do something, especially when you're given the breaks that they were, those two hit batters. First of all, the leadoff double, Taylor does his job, leadoff double. I'm thinking, oh man, when he hits that ball, I'm thinking, we're again going to be 13-12 in 15 innings. I mean, this is what's coming. And then two hit batters, the bases are loaded. I'm thinking, man, Seager's getting, you know, we're right back in. And Peterson's up there, we're right back in this game. And we, like the fans, like it's like, here we go, not we, the Dodgers. And they get out of that, and the next inning is a single to start that thing, and they get out of that as well with the line drive double play that they're showing right now on our TV. I mean, it's just they were there for the Dodgers. They were not completely wiped out by the Astro pitchers, at least the early ones before Morton got in there. But they just couldn't get that one hit that turned the tide back in their favor.
That was it, the missed opportunities. And Puig had numerous pitches he missed on. You saw him jumping around, bounding there in the batter's box because he knew he had missed a couple of pitches that were right there. Low-hanging fruit for him, but difficult to hit. That's why these guys are out there playing. They're the professionals, but the pitchers got the best of them last night. So, yeah, the Dodgers, as upset as they are, you know they're highly upset. A wonderful regular season, and you get to this Game 7 in the World Series, and you had opportunities, and you did not take advantage of them, whereas the Houston Astros, they did take advantage of them, and so they're the world champions, and congrats to them. A wonderful season by them. And SI got it right. We always talk about the Sports Illustrated jinx.
Yeah.
Well, they got it right. 4 years ago, they have Springer on the cover, and they're talking about this rebuild down in Houston and how they've amassed this talent, and they pegged them as the 2017 champions, and they were right on point. So I guess we want to be on SI now, right? We want to be on the cover?
I mean...
As long as it's 4 years out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't want to predict me to be something good.
Right. Not during the preseason. Not the addition leading up to the commencing of a new season. You don't want to be on there. But as far as 4 years out, okay, put us on there. And this, what is beautiful about this is the journey. And I always talk about it when you see guys crying at the end of the season, they won that championship. It's not because they just now won. It's because everything they've gone through to get there, the spring training, even the offseason before you get to the spring training. And then everything that regular season entails and the attrition you have to overcome, adversity, all those things. And then you finally get to that pinnacle, and you sit back and you reflect on that, and that's when the tears start flowing. But you know, SI to see this in the making 4 years ago. I don't know who wrote the article.
Ben Reeder, who I thought was it
okay?
Yeah, who I thought was now who hosts at 6 p.m. here for CBS Sports Radio for a second. Bill.
Good for him, yeah. Because he called his shot, and he was correct, and the way they've gone about doing this, it's just been perfect. You stick to your process, and that's what they did.
Yeah, I mean, this is a journey that goes back into the National League.
Right? Yeah, right.
Like 6 or 7 years ago, where they're transitioning into the American League. They bring in Jeff Luhnow and his staff, and they get to a more, you know, sabermetric kind of standpoint and looking at things a little bit differently. And we can talk about this more in depth later on in the show as well, but, you know, they had three straight horrible, embarrassing seasons, and Jose Altuve was there for some of that. And
was it 300 lost seasons he was there
in
for?
In a row. So you go through all those draft picks and all the development and the right signings and the right trades using some of those assets, and it becomes what this team was. And A.J. Hinch was a manager that people weren't sure, you know, deserved to have this job and was coming out of the front office to take it. And that has worked out here as well. They had their hiccups along the way, but they figured things out. They rescued themselves in the ALCS, thank goodness, to beat the Yankees.
Oh, shut up.
And then history wasn't on their side in this standpoint, losing Game 6. Usually then you lose Game 7, at least recently in World Series history. They didn't do that as well. They won last night in somebody else's place with a beautifully constructed road game. I mean, really, there's so much credit to go around and so much to appreciate about what the Astros accomplished. And then you throw in kind of the non-baseball sports stuff and what this must mean for Houston. And, you know, we can speak a little bit to it here in New York. Now, not for me personally, because I'm not the Yankee fan that you are, and they didn't get to the ultimate championship like the Astros did. But the Yankees in 2001, post 9/11, you know, certainly galvanized New York and helped the healing process post that, and now Houston post Harvey. you know, gets a similar boost here from this baseball team, which has been, by the way, almost unbeatable.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost makes you believe in higher powers and the universe and karma, whatever it is, that they're like probably now 40-5 since the storm, which is crazy.
Yeah, to overcome that and not be able to get home. And remember the back and forth between them and the Rangers, and they didn't want to switch those home stints. The Rangers didn't. And so you're dealing with being displaced as long as they were. I believe they played those games. They were supposed to play at home. They played them in Tampa, if my memory serves me correctly. And so you deal with that, and yet that doesn't derail you, although your mind is elsewhere. You're still able to perform there on the diamond, and that's part of that journey I was just discussing. That's part of overcoming things like that and not allowing that to knock you off your game. And so it's just a magical season for these guys and a magical ride if you look back over the last 4 or 5 years and how they brought this all together. And what else panned out was these number one picks they have. I think they may have misfired on one. That's about it. And so you're talking about being able to evaluate talent and bring these guys up at the right moment, and they brought them up pretty young and have their talent and their abilities to come shining through. Tip of the cap to that front office and their scouting department and everyone who's involved in evaluating these players and helping them to develop.
So much more to unpack from Game 7 of the World Series last night. Phone lines open for your Astros celebration, your Dodger regrets, and really bright futures for both of these organizations as well. Nothing fluky about these two teams being in the World Series, going to 7, and the Astros ending up winning at 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Also this morning, Hook 'em, the head coach, the University of Texas, Austin football Longhorns, Tom Herman,
Austin,
will join us.
Everybody knows University of Texas. You don't say Austin.
And Michael Rappaport, who might be the most famous sports talker at the moment, has made the rounds here at CBS Sports Radio /WFAN. And this morning, it's our turn to check in with Mr. Rappaport. His new book, this book, has balls.
Is he coming in?
Sports
or
rants.
He's right here in New York. You can get up and come in.
He came in for Tiki and Tierney. I'm just put it out there. He came in for Tiki and Tierney. He came in for the Boomer Esiason morning extravaganza, but he's calling in to Gio and Jones.
Yeah, connect the dots.
Yep, to you. Also, dumb Kyrie Irving, dumb Papa John. Good pizza, but dumb Papa John. And so much more to do. When we come back, though, the post game took an interesting turn last night in L.A. A young man made a horrible decision after a very, very, very impressive victory. That and a Brad Heller updates next on CBS Sports Radio.
Give us a call right now, 855-212-4CBS.
But it's fun. I mean, we were talking about this morning, me and Mike. As New Yorkers, we have the two giant Super Bowls most recently. But other than that, we've never experienced a title as an adult, and I would desperately take a Mets title or a Rangers title because it's a fun thing to live through, and I'd like to live through it. I remember 86 a little bit, at 94 with the Rangers a little bit more, but I wouldn't mind having an adult title.
Oh, it's so exhilarating.
Celebrate. Yeah,
oh,
I know.
So
well, you're
fun.
Bored by them with all your Yankee
wins. Oh, it's
wins.
Just, I mean, the feeling is indescribable.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, it's just, oh.
Well, and condolences as well. Again, my deepest heartfelt condolences to your Yankee brethren.
I mean,
it's been long years. Feels like 8 decades since you guys last won a title. I mean,
it feels like the drought back in the 80s.
Oof.
Yeah.
Well, again, no matter what form it's taken, you fight off the man and push through and
always
persevere. That's
you don't give up. That's what Yankees fans do.
Mm-hmm.
Persevere.
Well, as you can tell, no Gio today. Hopefully he's back in the big seat tomorrow. So with me here next to BJ, Brad Heller gets to be next to me and give you your sports news this morning. Hello, Brad.
Good morning, guys. Brian, I feel you with the Yankees.
No, nobody cares. We're done with that.
All right.
Thanks for No thanks for filling me, but yeah, I got you.
Okay.
Stick together.
Sports Illustrated's 2014 prediction coming true. The magazine called for the Astros to win the World Series in 2017, highlighting George Springer on the cover.
And George drills this one deep to left center field. You can kiss that one goodbye. A 2-run home run for George Springer. And the Astros lead it 5-0. Springer homers for the fourth straight game.
Robert Ford on the Astros Radio Network. Springer's record-tying fifth home run of the World Series, earning him MVP honors. The Astros beat the Dodgers in Game 7, 5-1 in L.A. Their first World Series title. Here's skipper A.J. Hinch.
They won the most wins in the league, and we won over 100, and it seems easy. And it's a journey, and obviously it's very rewarding to get to the finish line and be the last team standing.
Hinch used five pitchers with Charlie Morton going the final four innings for the win. Yu Darvish took the loss in both World Series starts. He only lasted five outs. The parade scheduled for Friday in Houston, and Carlos Correa has to plan his wedding. The shortstop proposed to his girlfriend on the field during the celebration. NBA LeBron and the Cavaliers have dropped 5-6, 124-107 to the Pacers.
We have an opportunity to be very good, but then you see, you know, some of the laws that we have, you know, it's just very difficult on our team right now. We're just trying to figure it out on the fly, and unfortunately, we don't have time to practice a lot and do those things.
James did finish with 33 points and 11 assists. The Cavs are 3-5, while the Sixers are 4-4. First time at 500 in 4 years. They beat the Hawks 119-109. Six straight wins for the Celtics, 113-86 over the Kings. James Harden poured in 31, although I'm not sure anybody in Houston actually watched. The Rockets slam the Knicks in New York. NFL news. Browns receiver Josh Gordon's been reinstated by the league on a conditional basis. He hasn't played in a game since December of 2014. The Broncos making the switch at quarterback. Brock Osweiler will start in Philly on Sunday over Trevor Siemian. The Patriots signing Brian Hoyer to back up Tom Brady. Hoyer started his career in New England in 2009. Week 9 kicks off tonight. The Bills and the Jets, guys.
Can't stress enough that game is only on NFL Network tonight. And I believe it's the last Nance Romo CBS-produced Thursday game. I believe it shifts back to NBC for the rest of the
Above
way.
Above my pay grade.
Yeah? That seems like a simple thing to know or
well,
not know.
Well, figure it out then.
All right, because your pay
simple
grade's low.
Guy.
Phone calls, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. It's a special morning if you follow this Astro team all the way through, especially through the crap that has now become this World Series title, the first in team history. And then there's the other side. The Dodgers, so close to their first title in 29 years, but losing on their home turf. Phone calls this morning. First one comes from Don in Nashville. Don, good morning. You're on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on?
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Yeah, I spent all day emailing and calling people and talking about with these, you know, 10, 11, 12 run games and LA coming back to tie it and everything, about how this was going to be such a unbelievable, over the top, you know, fantastic game. And it was just like a regular Thursday night game somewhere out in the hinterlands.
It was really it did at times feel like Jaguars Titans on Thursday night. That's a fair point.
I mean, I was the bats went silent, and it's disappointing. I mean, you want to see them duke it out. This was supposed to be, you know, the thriller in L.A. and everything. And it was just very disappointing. Very disappointing.
I'm with you, Don. I was disappointed as well, and I got finished with all my prep for tonight's Inside College Football shows just so I could sit there and that game could have my full attention, and yet you had that. It got off to a great start for the Astros, and it continued for the Astros, and nothing from the Dodgers, and you knew immediately Yu Darvish had nothing. So I don't understand why a manager who's so he's so apt to pull pitchers when they're pitching well, he couldn't figure out this guy doesn't have it again, just like he didn't have it earlier in this series. So take him out. I'm taking him out early in that second inning. Yes, you want to give him a shot. Yes, you traded for him prior to the trade deadline. But you want this guy to win. I understand that, and you want to have faith in him. But you could tell he had nothing.
So you, after McCann walk Marwin Gonzalez double, you're taking
him
out there?
He's out. I'm taking him out. He has nothing.
Yeah,
I'm pulling him early. You have.
You know, my initial biggest issue was not him staying in the game. It was then that he went to Morrow after the homer, and I knew what he was doing when Morrow got up. As I said in the first segment, he was preparing to use him as if he was the seventh or the eighth inning and get him out of a jam, and then you start with Kershaw, whomever, in a fresh inning, and they go multiple frames. But then when Springer's the home run, now there's two outs and nobody on, and now the jam is over, and now you bring Morrow in, and yes, he gets the strikes out Bregman, the inning's over, and the threat's done, but now you've used him, who's still one of your better weapons, and really not the same situation he was. I almost thought you should have had somebody else up alongside, or just let Darvish pitch to Bregman while somebody else got, or then you brought Morrow back in.
He had Morrow up in at the end of the first inning, and so you get him back up. I had no problem with him putting him in. Then you want to stop this right now, so you put him in there because you're not going to get a ton out of him. You've pitched this guy pretty much every game. You're not getting a lot out of him, so I'm going to use him right now. I'm stopping the bleeding right now. So I know he's not going to be in here for the long haul. So this seems like a dire situation here in the second inning. Let's get him in and get us out of this jam, and maybe we can develop or put some offense forward and get us back into this ball game. So I had no problem with that call. I just had a problem when he went to it.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. I'm sure Don and National are the only one that's disappointed by the way Game 7 went last night. If you're an outsider and you're not rooting for one of these two teams, you just wanted a good baseball game. We did not get the drama of previous games in this series, which would have been hard to match. I mean, Game 2 and Game 5 are just epic all-time games, but certainly we could have had a little bit more doubt in the final score. I mean, it was 5-0 after the top of the second inning last night in L.A., so it didn't live up to some expectations, but the series was great. The two seasons were great for those two clubs, and just to go to Game 7 really, I guess, is the accomplishment, so to speak, for the series as a whole, even if the game itself standing alone was not an all-timer. Now, things did take an interesting turn after the game. Carlos Correa being interviewed by Ken Rosenthal on Fox, the normal kind of, oh my God, you just won, how does it feel? And then Carlos Correa doubled down, stole his own thunder. He's a world champ. He's the face of this franchise. He's going to be, you know, one of an all-time great, probably, the way his career is trending right now. And then he goes and does this live on Fox last night.
It's everything and more, man. It's everything and more. It's one of the biggest steps of my life, one of the biggest accomplishments of my life. And right now I'm about to take another big step in my life. Daniela Rodriguez, you make me the happiest man in the world. Will you marry me? Will you marry me? Yes.
Yeah. Say yes, woman. I mean, first of all, Charlie Morton doesn't make you the happiest man in the world. George Springer doesn't. They just won you a world title.
He said
Carlos
that.
Carlos Correa.
He said that.
He proposed to one of those
he
guys.
He said that at the beginning.
Give them a present right at the beginning.
He said that at the beginning. Why do you have a problem
with
that?
He said, Danielle, you make me the happiest man in the world.
He said, what did he say at the beginning of that cut? He said, this is the best moment of my life. Now
I'm
about to have the second best moment of my life.
He's going to add to it.
I had no problem with that. None whatsoever. Did you get down on one knee when you proposed?
I did not. Yes, I did.
In a public place?
No.
Oh.
No. I had not won that. We lost the World Series that year, so I couldn't do it on the field.
I did it outside an airport in Puerto Plata.
Were you leaving?
Like, no.
Before I go?
Before I go, let me lead it with you.
Yeah.
And don't take this the wrong way. Just say I do, okay? I'll be back soon.
Probably.
No. I was just arriving, man. Come on.
Oh, you got off the plane.
Yeah.
To begin a romantic rendezvous.
From all those strangers.
Now,
I have a heart. But I have no...
one moment.
Yeah. It's a fleeting heart.
And it sucked, so I stopped it.
I had no problem with that because he'd already congratulated his teammates. He talked about how this is a great moment, best moment in my life, and now I'm going to add to this great moment by having the second best moment in my life. And what was wrong with that?
Yes?
Nothing. Why are you taking me so seriously all of a sudden?
I don't know when you're serious or when you're not. Maybe you suck at joking.
Maybe it's possible.
Yeah,
now,
how
poor,
about that?
Poor Daniela was stuck behind a barricade at first, and she smartly ripped it out of the way. Like, get me that ring. My goodness.
It was huge.
Don't hold me back.
The ring was bigger than the baseball.
I mean, it basically was slicker than the baseball, too, I think. Darvish should throw a slider with that bad boy, not an actual baseball. Now, I had to go to my mind goes in two ways when these things happen. First off, it's like when guys do their home run celebration or their touchdown celebration, whatever it is. I'm always amazed by the memory of it. Like, if I hit a home run, I would be running on the bases so fast going, that was a home run, that was a home run,
yeah,
that was a home run. And I'd be excited about, like, the game. Now we're winning, we're almost back in it. I wouldn't remember to double tap my left shoulder and blow a kiss to the sky and make a bird symbol in my hands like these guys do. Now, how did he, in the moments after the World Series, where'd the ring come from? Who was holding it? When did they get it? Does Ken Rosenthal know what's coming?
Does he do it if they lose?
Well, I mean, obviously not, but is he standing? Are they by the barricade on purpose? Like, did they not connect the barricades, or Daniela could rip a ray through it to get to the ring? I have so many follow-up questions about when things like that go down. But congratulations to the two of them. Now, I had to do some research to find out who she was. Now, do you know who Daniela Rodriguez is?
No.
Besides the future Mrs. Correa.
Other than my brother did live in Houston doing his residency, had a picture with them at the grocery store.
Okay. Now, Daniela is a former Miss Texas USA, Miss USA Texas.
Oh, cool. There you go.
And she, no one, at least from what I read this morning, we're not sure how this all came about, but she threw out the first pitch before an Astros game last August. We all might have seen it. I didn't remember it this morning until I Googled it. It was terrible. Now, she stood there, and she did, like, the I'm looking at you thing, like, and she, like, stood there and took a pitcher's pose and got ready and wound up, and then she spiked the ball.
Did she throw it to Correa?
I don't remember that part, but
okay,
she spiked it through the left-hand batter's box. I mean,
okay,
it was nowhere close to the home plate.
All right.
But so that was last August. And
left an impression.
In October of last year, so 2.5 months later or so, Instagram pictures start popping up of the two of them hanging out at concerts, wherever. So the relationship begins within 3 months of the first pitch. And I'm thinking, you know, that's a baller move. You're sitting in the dugout, this beautiful woman's on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go, oh, she's cute. Like, how do you make the connection?
You have people within the Astros organization,
right,
your media, your PR people, you say, how do I find so-and-so?
Yeah.
How do I get a message to so-and-so?
Good for him.
Mm.
It reminds me of Andy Roddick, who's married to Brooklyn Decker, who was a model, and now she's an actress and a businesswoman. He just saw her in the magazine or someone was like, ah, you're pretty, I want to take you to dinner. And had his agent call her agent. They went out to dinner. Now they're married and they've got two kids.
Yep. There you go.
Took me 3.5 years to convince my wife to like me.
Really?
I mean, I wasn't the number one tennis player in the world, nor the Astros all-star shortstop, which might have helped the cause.
I did that with a San Francisco 49ers cheerleader.
During the game?
I met her prior to the game, and then our eyes met. And then I reached
when
out
I
to...
When I didn't sack Steve Young, I looked over at her.
Yeah, exactly. I had
or Elvis
my buddy.
Who would you not have been chasing down?
Who was the quarterback then? I have no idea. Young was still there.
Okay.
But I had my buddy in RPR reach out to their PR, and that was it. It fizzled.
So she can't fraternize with Niners, but she can with the visiting team?
Yeah.
Look at her. Look at
Apparently
you.
Apparently so.
I wish I had some game.
You got the one you wanted.
Yeah, that was good. That worked out well. But again, it took a really long time.
Okay, so what?
It took a long time.
It's supposed to be easy?
You sound like her now.
It's supposed to take time.
That's how she explains it. So you don't look down the end. I'm like, yeah, but it sucked for 2.5 years. Not the whole 2.5 years. But it
so
was
you
annoying.
Were pursuing this woman who's now your wife for 2.5 years?
Not consistently pursuing, but
okay,
I was pursuing at the beginning. There was no return pursuit.
Right.
And then there was, and then we both kind of went our separate ways. Not that, we still stayed in touch. We lived in the same neighborhood, so I saw her. And then things started back again in the back half.
So what occurred to force her to change her mind?
It's a long story.
Oh, we'll make it a short one.
No.
Then we need to go to break.
She just realized that I was awesome.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. Boom.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Kyrie Irving remains very good at basketball, not good at geography and intelligence. That's next on Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.
Follow us on Twitter at Gio and Jones.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tim Herman, the head coach, Texas football, will join us.
Tim? I don't know what the hell you're joking.
He's on the show in about an hour from now. We'll also check in with Michael Rappaport, author, podcast host, actor.
Isn't the T silent? Rappaport.
No. No.
Yes.
No.
Rappaport.
No.
T Silent, man.
We'll ask him when he joins us in hour number
three. Okay, Tim.
Big Friday edition of Geo and Jones is coming to you, by the way.
Really?
Stephon Diggs of the Minnesota Vikings will be on the show. And your buddy...
Is he back playing? Did he play last week, Diggs? Mm. Good.
Mm. And your buddy Bill Hancock, who's the executive director.
Yes, he runs everything up there.
The college football playoff.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get up there and take him up on that food.
So here's Kyrie Irving, point guard once for the Cleveland Cavaliers, now of the Boston Celtics. This began when he was still in Cleveland. It continues now in Boston. Kyrie remains unsure of the physical composition of the planet that we live on.
I like that, physical composition.
Still hanging on to the possibility of things being flat, not round. And here is Kyrie with Gino Auriemma, holding court with Gino, the podcast hosted by the UConn women's basketball legendary coach.
When I started actually doing research on my own and figuring out that there is no real picture of Earth, like there's not one picture of Earth, and we haven't been back to the moon 1961 or 1969, and it becomes like conspiracy.
No, it doesn't. I mean, Kyrie.
I don't know what he's trying to do here, because in one instance he's saying, I just want to challenge universal truth.
Right.
On the other, hey, I don't really believe this stuff, what I'm saying, but I want to have an open conversation. Then I do believe what I'm saying, and I'm being duped here. We're all being duped. Which one is it? Keeps contradicting himself.
Yeah, I'm trying not
plenty
to.
Plenty of pictures. You get pictures all the time, don't we?
I want to yell at this guy. I really, really do. Now, I'm all for debate, and you should listen to the other side. You should, you know, put yourself in somebody else's shoes and think about the way they think about certain things. Be open to conversation and to changing your thoughts, because things do change and develop. And so there's a lot of room for that. But there's also things that are called facts, that are facts that you can't argue. Like, my sweatshirt's gray. You can't tell me that it's green. And if you do, you're an idiot.
Wait, let me look at it for a while.
We're not, or you're colorblind. But it's gray, right? I mean, they're like, 2 + 2 = 4. It's not 7. It's not 13. It's not 119. And if you're saying those other things, you should be shouted down and shamed. Kyrie Irving and other people. Now, I refuse to think about this, because no one should waste their brain power on this. But I guess people, the real, true, flat earth people, if part of their assumption is that there is some kind of mythical, like, wall at the end of the flatness that, like, keep us from falling off and send the water back the other way so that the water just run off the table from the oceans. I mean, it's such a preposterous thing. We don't have a picture of the Earth. I mean, what is
plenty of pictures. So the pictures we see of the other planets, is that just Hollywood's making that up? And those planets, are they flat as well? They look round to me. I am colorblind at certain times of the day. Like when I'm picking out clothes sometimes. But I don't get this. So is this only... His comments and his view and claims, are they only specific to the Earth and not to other planets out there?
I don't know. I don't know how far he takes it. But you know, I was struck by the music playing underneath the cut here and the clip of this conversation between Gino Auriemma and Kyrie Irving. I think it needs a change. It needs to more fit the conversation that was going on between these two.
When I started actually doing research on my own and figuring out that there is no real picture of Earth, like there's not one picture of Earth, and we haven't been back to the moon 1961.
Yeah, like the music needs to be mocking this. And if like, I'm Gino,
it becomes like conspiracy.
It needs circus music.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Maybe that's Coach Auriemma's cuckoo music. Maybe that's what he plays when you have a guest on that you think that's off the wall.
I feel like, you know, Gino's a nurturer of young people, right? I mean, that's part of the job of being head coach. I feel like he should have put the microphone down and be like,
that sounds like
come here, Kyrie.
Which video game is that? It sounds familiar.
It sounds like Mario a little bit, right? Like,
yeah.
And it sounds like something Gio would play on an instrument he pulled out of his briefcase.
Yeah.
But like, Gino should grab him and be like, all right, no, we're not recording this, Kyrie.
Let me show you this picture.
Something. You can't play defense still. You don't have Gordon Hayward now. You got to figure things out. I need you to be in charge of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You have bigger fish to fry. Sweetheart, the Earth is round. And then just like rub his cheek, tell him it's going to be okay. Maybe give him a lollipop. Pat him on the head. And please, I've heard this mentioned before, like referencing Kyrie's Duke education. The guy was at Duke for 7 seconds.
Which maybe you can learn a lot in seven seconds at Duke, right?
He doesn't think this in spite of his Duke education. He thinks it because he didn't get a Duke education for 4 years. And someone there would have smacked this thought out of him. I mean, please, again, there are a lot of problems to tackle in this world. Things that need debate and back and forth and questions and critical thinking. The shape of the earth is not one of them. Everyone stop asking him about this, okay? He's an idiot in this one fashion, and maybe more, I don't know. But this is ridiculous. Stop talking about it. The earth is not flat. Well, it's not.
They want him to continue to step in it. That's why they ask him about it. They want him to see how many different variations of
why is Gino sabotaging him, though? Gino shouldn't even be bringing this up. Gino should be not asking
Gino thinks
the hard
like
questions.
We do. Maybe that's why.
Hey, Kyrie, I'm going to give you one last chance to get away from this. Mm-hmm. Nah, man, have you seen a picture of a rounded earth? Because I haven't.
Maybe he doesn't believe in gravity either.
Who knows? I mean, it's all on the table. You might as well, if you're going to go this route, you got to go all in. Like, there's a guy here in the building who's one of those crazy internet conspiracy theorists.
The black helicopter.
Yeah, all this stuff. Like, you know, hidden kids and third shooters and the grassy knoll. I mean,
FEMA camps.
I mean, crisis actors and people like that. The same guy was in San Bernardino and was also in Katrina and was at Nyla. No. But at least that guy's all in. He didn't pick just one fight to fight.
Right, right.
He believes it all.
Yep.
Kyrie's got to go all in. That's the only way to salvage this. He's got to question now everything, not just the shape of the earth. When we come back, the idiocy continues from a pizza maker blaming the NFL for his pizza not being something you want to eat. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. It's Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.